welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 250 of the podcast. And it is the 3rd of January, 2016, as I record this on a very wet day in Bath, and our first show of 2016, all very exciting. I am a New Year's junkie. I love New Year. I hate the end of December. I really love kind of blank sheets. I've got, you know, my notebooks, and I just love New Year. So happy times. Just back from Prague, and basically just good to get away in between Christmas and New Year in that, and force myself to rest, essentially, because I work from home. Then I tend to work the entire time because I love what I do, obviously. But to get away is really important for both my fiction writing and thinking and resting and spending time with my husband, basically. So we had a good few days in Prague. It was a lot warmer than expected, definitely climate change issues there. It was really, really warm, no snow. I finally visited Sedlec's ossuary, which is the Bone Chapel featured in my thriller Crypt of Bone. And it was awesome to finally get there after such a long time. I wrote that book when I was living in Australia and researched that online. I'd been to Prague before, but not Sedlec's, which is about 50k outside. I also went to the Jewish graveyard there, which is amazing. And I do have some ideas of how Prague might fit into Destroyer of Worlds, my next novel. More on that later. And you can find pictures of Prague and my fiction updates at jfpen.com/now, where I sort of give an update on what I'm up to. Okay, so here's what's happening today, as we have a big show because I had a lazy last show and didn't post an intro. So today we have a pretty big show because of the beginning of the year. So just so you know what's coming, so I know some people fast forward through some sections. So first of all, I'm going to look back at 2015 in terms of the publishing industry, main events, and my own goals and what I achieved and didn't achieve. Then I'm going to look forward into 2016 in terms of my predictions for what's important for you and self-publishing in general in 2016, and also around what I'm setting for my own goals this year, so you guys keep me accountable and to help you think about your own writing and creative goals. Third, I have a whole load of super things coming up that you might be interested in. Well, I'll be sharing those. Then I'll be doing a listener segment with a catch up on what you've been doing while listening to the show, plus new patrons and sponsorship. And then instead of an interview today, I recorded a segment on my own writing process. So if you're skipping forward, then listen out for that in the second half of the show. As ever, all the links will be in the show notes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts, and this is episode number 250. So let's get into looking back at publishing stuff in 2015. I tried to just sort of mine my own brain before I Googled various blogs, posts and things on the roundups. The things that stood out for me, probably the biggest thing, was this reporting on the end of ebooks and the rise of print. Oh, the surprising fact that print seems to be overtaking ebooks again and all this type of thing, which... of course, those of us who realise and don't use ISBNs, like I don't use ISBNs, and actually AuthorEarnings.com reported that 37% of ebooks on Amazon.com and 25% of ebooks on Amazon.co.uk have no ISBNs. And none of those books are counted in the industry statistics, which only include the AAP's the publishers that are in this AAP. It doesn't include indie authors. And the reporting generally seems to say that the true US ebook market, including non-ISBN sales, is at least 50% larger than the limited statistics from Nielsen and Bowker. So for me, the big kind of learning from this
for me was that it demonstrates the divergence between traditional publishing and indie authors. I started out the year really caring what the industry thought and did, and I ended the year, I went to a conference, and I actually left early because I realised that I don't care anymore. And this is really interesting, and I think it's a sign of the change in the industry as indies, in that we can now do pretty much anything as indie authors, and traditional publishing is still absolutely brilliant if it fits your goals as an author, and not knocking it at all. What I'm saying is that we're almost like a parallel industry, and Joe Conrath coined the term, I think, the shadow industry, which I really like. I love being in the shadow industry, the kind of the alternative and, you know, that the kind of edgy side of things, the more original perhaps. And what this is interesting, I mean, there's been some big expansions of what indies have done this year. The breakout success of The Rabbit Who Wants to Fall Asleep, I think, is a really funny one. The first CreateSpace print book to hit the New York Times list. And then they changed the rules because they don't want those pesky indies up there. A self-published romance book made the Washington Post Best of the Year list. Walmart continues to carry CreateSpace books. Jamie Maguire, of course, Barbara Freethy. A number of authors are now using Ingram Spark and distribution of print books to bookstores that way. There are basically just lots of things that we can do now that we don't need traditional publishing for. And I think that this kind of reporting on the sales really just showed how divergent we are becoming. So Amazon continues to expand with Kindle Scout, which is basically about getting a traditional publishing deal with Amazon. And of course, there are great terms, but it's still a deal rather than self-publishing. They also opened up Amazon Crossing for direct submission, which is again their translation publishing arm. They released Amazon Story Writer, a script writing tool, which presumably has links into Amazon Studios for all the TV Amazon Prime are now doing. And Jeff Bezos has said they want to win an Oscar. which is quite likely, let's face it. Plus, Amazon opened a physical bookstore. Audible and audio in general continue to grow, all of which is amazing. So again, as ever, Amazon continues to push the bar. There was also in the forums and the Facebook groups, a general disillusionment with Amazon as KDP Select moved to pages read, payment per pages read, and dropped the amount per pages read over the months, and also per store, depending on how much people are paying for Prime. So there's also been, you know, the usual general moaning about dropping income. And it's funny, you know, because I look at it and it just makes me that everything will continue to change. You know, we just cannot expect things to stay the same. And nobody ever guaranteed that we could make money this way. So, I mean, I'm still amazed that we can make money this way. I mean, it really is just stunning. So perhaps I feel kind of lucky in a way. Although, you know, we'd all love the breakout success. We'd all love the millions of sales that some authors get. But I've never had that. And I've had steady growth over time based on the number of books I have out there and the number of channels I sell in. I have never had a breakout success. I've just had steadily increasing income over time, even though some of that income on some stores is lower per book than it was. So, you know, I think I'm the tortoise. you know, slow and steady, continue to write, continue to put books out, continue to use multiple platforms, and it's all good. Other things this year, there are a few, you know, big changes, really. I mean, obviously, Amazon goes from strength to strength. In the meantime, the Authors Guild highlighted the increasingly terrible contracts for authors, but at least the Authors Guild are sort of being a bit more vocal. Nook closed their international stores except for the UK. Oyster also closed, and their people went to Google Play. Some of their people went to Google Play, which will be interesting. We'll talk about that in 2016. Google Play closed their doors to new publishers. So actually right now, we still can't publish on Google Play directly. Flipkart in India closed, which was the only sort of competitor for ebooks in India to Amazon. And Kobo took over all of the Flipkart customers, which is interesting. And Rakuten, who owns Kobo, bought Overdrive, which is the library ebook and audiobook service. So you never know if Rakuten are on a buying spree. We could see some changes in 2016. We know many of us still expect someone to buy Nook. We shall see. Maybe it will be Rakuten. Who knows? So that's a kind of overview of what I experienced in self-publishing in 2015. It feels like there's loads and loads more opportunities as ever than there were, and it also feels that authors are beginning to shift into the global market, which I'll talk about as we look forward into 2016. But just as a personal roundup, so every year on the 1st of January, I post my goals. And on the 1st of January 2015, I did post goals. And I looked back at the end of December as to what I have achieved. So just as a roundup, so you guys keep me accountable. And also to prove that I'm not just someone who talks about self-publishing, I do actually self-publish. So I wanted to put out 6 books in 2015. I put out 7 in English. Gates of Hell, One Day in New York, Deviants, Risen Gods, my fiction. That's 3 full length and 1 novella in ebook, print, and audiobook for most of them. No audiobook yet for Risen Gods. We will consider, we probably need a different narrator for Risen Gods, so hanging back on that for a minute. I also put out How to Make a Living with Your Writing, which was actually listed on Inc.com as one of the top 100 business books in 2015, which I was very pleased about. Also, in the last few weeks of December, I put out Co-Writing a Book, Collaboration and Co-Creation for Authors with Jay Thorne, and also Successful Self-Publishing, How to Self-Publish an Ebook and Print Book. Both of those both of those were written based on audio first. So they were audio files that were transcribed and then edited. And Jay edited the first draft of Co-Writing a Book, and I did the Successful Self-Publishing. And that will be my model, hopefully, for 2016. So I did kind of start doing that, but I wouldn't say they were dictation. They were more transcribed and edited audio. I also released 3 box sets, the Arcane box set 2, the London Crime Thriller box set, and the Writer's Toolbox, which is not for sale on Amazon. It's only on Kobo, iBooks and Nook as it's over $9.99. It caps that 70% royalty rate. And the reason I mention that is because looking at my Kobo income for 2015, the top 3 sellers were all box sets. And that is super important. I hope you will consider doing a box set in 2016, as they are super income and you don't really have to do much extra work. Plus also some translations, Profanación in Spanish with Alexandra Ferry, and Comment Publier un Livre. That's terrible French, but that's How to Market a Book in French with Cyril Godefroy. Thank you, Cyril, and very exciting. I also narrated my own Audible audiobook of Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur, a much bigger job than I expected. And I am going to do some voice training in 2016 so I can narrate some more of my books. In April, I rebranded my first 3 novels, retitling them and recovering them. So Pentecost, Prophecy and Exodus became Stone of Fire, Crypt of Bone and Ark of Blood. And I'm super pleased with the new covers. I also redesigned jfpen.com with a new theme and expanded my fiction email subscriber list and by giving away Day of the Vikings for free. And that's made a huge difference. My list has gone from around 600 to around 7,000 this year. So that's quite exciting. I also put out two courses, and I'm really pleased that I got these done again towards the end of the year. There is the Self-Publishing Success course and Creative Freedom. And Self-Publishing Success is aimed at people who have just started self-publishing or want to, maybe you've done one book or working on their first book or not doing well enough with their books, but at an early stage. And Creative Freedom is for those people who actually want to make a living with their writing and take things further. So I've got a kind of 101 and then a 202 advanced course, which I'm really pleased about. So I did actually stop doing courses at the end of 2014 because of the EU VAT laws, which make it more complicated selling direct. But what's exciting is that a whole load of sites began to deal with that issue. And so as long as you sell through an intermediary, obviously Amazon, Kobo, iBooks, Nook, all of those companies deal with the EU VAT. But I'm using Teachable. And in fact, next week, I'll be doing an interview with Ankur Nagpal from Teachable. And we'll be talking about that. So that is coming next week. But very happy with those two courses. Professional speaking, I started the year in New Zealand, spoke in Charleston in March. I did a keynote there. I spoke in New York in July, plus the Shetland Islands and Loch Fyne in Scotland, plus Bristol Crime Fest and several times in London. And I will be doing some more in 2016. I did a whole load of study around fiction writing. I'm doing a lot of the courses with Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush at WMG Publishing. And you can find that wmgpublishingonline.wordpress.com. And Dean and Chris both have brilliant blogs. And as writers in their 60s with over 500 books between them, they are probably the most experienced people that we can learn from. So I'm taking a lot of their courses. I also did the James Patterson Masterclass, which was fantastic and was directly responsible for me co-writing Risen Gods with Jay Thorne, which I'm really proud of. So that's cool. I also saw Elizabeth Gilbert speaking about Big Magic, which is a great book if you haven't read that yet, Creative Living Beyond Fear. And I went to Thriller Fest and I went to Robert McKee's Storynomics. So I'm really happy with the investment I made in my own writing and creativity this year. Definitely intending to do more craft work in 2016. I was, in fact, yesterday working on an advanced depth in writing course, which I'm doing with Dean and Chris. So really happy that I'm going in the right direction with my own writing. There's a great book again by Dean Wesley Smith called Stages of a Fiction Writer. If you're writing fiction, have a read of that and consider where you are. It's really interesting. It will really challenge you. In terms of community, I'm really happy to say that I didn't stop the podcast. As you know, at the beginning of the year, I really was considering stopping the show because it does take so much time. Instead, I decided to double down. So now you have a weekly show, and so many people have said that they enjoy the weekly show a lot. They enjoy the intro, and I love getting the tweets and emails. I really appreciate all your support on Patreon and your reviews on iTunes are really brilliant, and I just love the engagement we have now and the two-way interaction. So I really appreciate it, and I feel like I have much more of a community now through this podcast, so that's really cool. Also become more active in the International Thriller Writers, organising two events in London with Simon Toyne, and also went to Thriller Fest, and I'm also an active member of the Alliance of Independent Authors, and we had a super thing at the Indie Author Fringe at London Book Fair, and I've been doing monthly Q&As with Orna Ross over the year, and I always post them on Facebook as well. So facebook.com/thecreativepen. You can always find those Q&As after we've done them. So then just a report on income, because income is a good measurement of engagement and other things. And so it is one measurement of success. It's not the only one. But in 2015, my income was double what it was in 2014, which is actually quite crazy. My book sales income grew by 70%, which is super. But the main increase was affiliate income, which is generally a function of the size of an audience or traffic to a website. And basically, the creativepen.com now, this is my eighth year. There are over 1,200 blog posts, 250 podcasts. I have 250 odd videos. You know, when a site has been going 7 years, when a business has been going 7 years, this is the type of thing you can expect, I suppose. Also, I think that globally, self-publishing has reached some kind of tipping point, and there are more and more people searching for information on self-publishing. And when you have an older site like mine, with a lot of info, you do get more incoming traffic. So it did mean I hit a significant and unexpected financial goal, and my husband was able to leave his corporate job to join the Creative Pen, and we moved to Bath. So personal life was quite a big change in 2015. One of the reasons for moving here, I'll talk about for my 2016 goals. But I'm now living in Bath in the southwest, nearer my family, my mum, my cousin, and other people who, you know, as we get older, we all get involved in more caregiving. This increased growth in traffic meant that I also needed to make the site more stable. So I spent quite a long time sorting out technical back end stuff to make the site more stable, as I had a few crashes due to traffic spikes earlier in the year. So now, although I'm paying a lot more for hosting and all that type of thing, I'm really happy that I'm confident the site is good. And then just briefly, what didn't I achieve? One of the things I said I would do is narration of other people's books with ACX. And I just couldn't do that. You know, it was so surprising to me to discover how tiring audiobook narration is. So as I said, I'm going to look at voice training around breathing and concentration needed for narration, but it's definitely something I will not do for other people. So I have a lot of respect for audiobook narrators. I talked more about self-publishing in translation, but I pulled back from that because basically, the translations that I have done haven't made any money and they take a lot of time. So I'm more interested in selling foreign rights. I have not managed to crack my addiction to apps and Twitter and things and email before lunchtime. But hey, you know, whatever. I also said I would stop doing courses, and of course I did more courses. And well, part of the reason for that is I said I would do more live speaking, but actually I find live speaking super tiring. So I was happy to be able to do a basic course and then a more advanced course for authors so that I can help more people and not be totally exhausted. I also said I'd get my books into Google Play, which I haven't, because they shut down their new publisher portal in May. I'm hoping they will have something in 2016. So overall, I'm really pleased with the year. I feel like the Creative Pen is where it should be for a 7-year-old business, and I'm in good shape for carrying on. So, okay, so let's look forward to what's coming in 2016. Right, so what is important for 2016? What are the changes that are coming? And these are, again, I've mentioned many of these things before myself. I've also had a look at Jane Friedman has recently posted the top 5 industry issues for authors for 2016. Jane's coming on the show in 2 weeks' time, so we will talk more to her then. But in terms of thoughts, okay, so first of all is the growth of mobile reading and purchasing. So more people are reading on phones, not e-reading devices. So the growth of mobile globally means that increasingly phones and mobile are important. Now, this has been coming year on year, obviously, but when the Future Book Conference in November in Britain talked about mobile, I look at the Future Book as something that is not future. It is the publishing industry has realized it matters. So although mobile's been coming for ages, once Future Book covers it at their event, I figure it's mainstream. So essentially, people reading on phones, I mean, I read on my phone all the time. I also listen to audio on my phone. So think about what's interesting actually with phones is, of course, Apple have their iBooks app is now standard on all Apple devices. Google Play is standard on the Google phones. The Kindle app, of course, is on all phones, but you can't do in-app purchases on an iPhone because Apple charges for in-app purchases. So what's interesting is I can't shop on my Kindle app on my phone. I have to put things in my wish list and get them later, which is slightly annoying. So I'm really interested on how this mobile shift is going to work for the rise in iBook sales. So for you to consider for 2016, are your books able to be read and bought on mobile devices? Is your website optimized for mobile browsing? Can people subscribe to your downloads? Can they sign up for your email list on mobile? Have you tried reading your own books on a mobile device? How do they look? Do they work? Are they optimized? Does your book cover look good on mobile devices? And when you share links in emails and social media, can people buy on their devices? And this is super interesting, again, because I schedule quite a lot of tweets, for things, and I'm going to start doing more of that in 2016 for my books. I haven't done that so much because I, don't like tweeting buy my book. But with the rise of image marketing, which is super important again for 2016, Twitter cards, Twitter advertising, there's much more of a potential to share links in social media. Now, if you are on an iPhone and you're using Apple, and you click on a link to iBooks, you can buy it straight away, whereas you can't for the Kindle. So that is really interesting. I also, because the number of people who spend time on Facebook, this is, we've had Mark Dawson on the show with Facebook advertising for authors. I do think that making sure your content, your books are all available within the Facebook ecosystem is super important. So essentially, and if you don't have a smartphone, it's really, I consider the smartphone to be probably the number one device that helped me grow my business because you can do things when you're busy doing other stuff, basically. And as I said, I listen to audiobooks, I listen to podcasts, I do all my social media on the mobile device. So this is and I read on it too. So this is the thing. I think changing your mindset and really thinking about how you fit into the mobile ecosystem is super important. So that would be the first pick. The second thing is audio. And as I mentioned, I listen to a lot more audio and have actually finally joined Audible as a listener myself, which I haven't done so far. I've listened to audiobooks before, but have pretty much bought them standalone, whereas now I've joined as a monthly user. What is interesting to me is the gamification of audio, which I didn't know about before, and now I do. You basically get badges for how much you listen, and my husband is an Uber listener. He listens all the time, and he's got loads of badges, and it does make me feel quite competitive. So it's really interesting how they've gamified the hours you listen to. Fascinating stuff. I'm actually listening to Great Courses, which are really long ones, I'm currently listening to The Apocalypse, back to my theological roots, lectures on Revelation, basically. So expect more apocalyptic stuff in my books, but really interested in that kind of long form content through audio. Now, what's interesting is as someone who's been listening to podcasts for years, I'm getting to a point where I want more hardcore information in my podcast rather than a lot of chat. I'm hoping you're getting this from mine. I mean, I've always tried to focus on actionable things and specifics, although this will be quite a long show. I also listen on 1.5 speed as well, so I hope I don't sound like a pixie if you do that from mine. But what's also interesting is the and of course audio on the mobile phone is really easy, and which is why many people are listening to podcasts and audio. Apple CarPlay has also arrived on my phone, and Apple CarPlay and Google Auto will be installed in new cars in 2016, which means streaming audio for audiobooks and podcasts will gain a greater attention share over live radio. It also means for the Whisper Sync, if people buy the ebook on Amazon and then they also get the audiobook, they can carry on listening in their car. And Whisper Sync means that the book picks off with narration where you stopped reading. So it's really super amazing. So I've been talking about this for a whole year, but finally, 2016, this has actually arrived. So very exciting. So I do think that audio will be a bigger deal. However, on the other side of audio, my own royalties have slipped, and many others have found it slipping because of deep discounting. And this is the problem with ACX. If you're exclusive with ACX, which I have been, is they basically control the pricing. And if you buy an ebook on Amazon, your audiobook will be discounted. And many people, many audiobook listeners follow BookBub and things like that, get the ebook for cheap and then get a discounted audiobook, which again, you have no control over through ACX. So I think what's going to happen this year in 2016 is there will be something, there will be other models arising that challenge ACX's dominance, and indie authors will choose other routes to audio success. So either iTunes will do something direct, there will be more audiobook companies, more authors will do their own narration, will sell direct. There are different ways that people will use audio in 2016 because of the way that the royalties have changed, and royalty split deals with no money up front are getting harder and harder to find because narrators just aren't making enough money from those deals with the deep discounting. So that's a positive and a kind of change shift with audio. Then again, with everything happening with Kindle Unlimited and the downward income figures there, authors will focus on more on going wide to different stores and global sales. We've seen this at the end of last year. People started to talk about going into the other stores. Something I've been preaching for years. Again, I don't believe in relying on one source of income. I will definitely be reporting in May after my own financial tax year, which ends at the end of April. I will report on the percentage of sales from non-US sources, non-US, non-UK sources, perhaps. So I can start tracking that over time. But I can say that according to Kobo Writing Life, I have now sold books in 72 countries and they are all English books. So that's really interesting. I think one thing I'm going to try and do is get a international pricing guide done, because many authors have found, for example, we talked about the Indian rupee change, how differently you have to price in different markets in order to actually make sales. So this is really interesting and something to consider. I find Apple's tier pricing to be very useful. If you go direct to Apple and use iTunes Connect, you will see that pricing is in tiers, and per country it will show you the various levels. So that can help. But in terms of global, I would still say focus on English books first before getting into translation. Self-publishing and translation is a real pain and hasn't made me any significant money so far. And in fact, I will be looking to sell more foreign rights in 2016. The Alliance of Independent Authors has a Going Global campaign for 2016, and IPR License is doing more to make international sales easier. So I will be reporting on that. Because I'm going to get into that myself. Of course, with global growth and the spread of self-publishing and the internet, the spread of the internet in general, streaming internet coming to more and more places. In fact, I saw one stat, I wrote it down. India now has more internet users than the US, and China has twice as many internet users than the US. India also has double the number of English speakers than the UK, and all are educated. So if you think about the rise, how the internet spreading, how self-publishing publishing spreading is going to bring more books and many more writers. What I'm also interested in is Microsoft has hailed 2016 as the year of AI, artificial intelligence, and AI in terms of virtual assistants, conversation, you know, with Skype translation, user interfaces, customer services, you know, lots of different ways in which AI, big data, is going to start impacting our world a lot more. I'm really hoping, now this is semi-prediction, but I'm really hoping that with AI, big data, natural language processing, and machine learning, all of this will somehow merge together in a discoverability platform that's actually based on the text of books. I think we are at a crazy point in time where we have to come up with 7 keywords. I think we'll look back at this time as really stupid. We have to choose 7 keywords or keyword phrases and choose, you know, 2 or 3 or 5 categories to put our books in. It is crazy. And then the Amazon algorithm right now looks at, you know, people who bought this also, you know, might like this. So what I think will happen is that maybe this year, maybe next, that there will be this expansion and big data, machine learning, AI, that will make discoverability based on the text of books, which, and some kind of emotion analysis that will be able to deliver an experience that readers want. I'm sure that Amazon is working on these types of discoverability things, but I'm hoping that Apple iBooks and Kobo and other people are too. I think we will see a lot more in that space. Also, with the content overload, it means that curation will become even more important. So I think there will be more tools in this space, you know, and I'm definitely going to be looking at, you know, doing more curation of my own reading, and putting it, you know, putting things out there in 2015 on things like Facebook, you know, Medium, LinkedIn. These things are really great instead of blogging on your own site or doing both, so that you can actually get in front of people, because that discoverability is just going to get harder and harder, as we know. But I think we will see some shift and there will be better tools in that space. But there will also be an increase in pay to play, as we've seen with Facebook advertising and other advertising in 2016. BookBub may well get bought. If they get bought by a publisher, it will be a real pain in the neck for indie authors, because they might just focus on their own books. That is a big database of emails. So it'll be very interesting to see. They have had a funding round, BookBub. So if they do sell, it will be very interesting to see who buys them. Let's hope again it will be Rakuten or whether Amazon, I don't know. It's going to be a tough one, but I do think that if they, you know, they're likely to be approached to be bought. Wattpad is doing some different things as well, you know, focusing much more on authors and doing all kinds of really interesting stuff. There was a podcast on Kobo Writing Life talking about Wattpad. So if you write YA or romance, I think it's a great platform. I'm really hoping, I mentioned before about Google Play and the people from Oyster, so the subscription service, but also not so much that it was subscription, although Google Play obviously has subscription for music, that we will see the user interface and the easy publication that Oyster had into Google Play. If they emerge with a stronger ebook platform and fix the nightmare price match issues, that will be fantastic. And I definitely hope that I will be putting my books on Google Play in 2016. I also still, we're either going to see Nook bought or continue to, yeah, not great. You know, some people say Nooksfree is still really strong, but in the UK, which is its only other place outside the US, it's not. So we shall see. I also think there will be more offerings in the self-publishing distribution space. Just before Christmas, Publish Drive launched and is highly rated by the Alliance of Independent Authors, distributing to a ton of smaller stores in European countries. So what we've seen in Germany, for example, example, is that Tolino has 50% of the ebook market, and Publish Drive distributes to, you know, bigger stores in Poland and other places. So very interesting to see what we're going to see in that space. Also, I think direct-to-consumer will be expanding. So, you know, we're all marketing to readers and some authors are selling direct. I was selling direct in 2014. I was selling ebooks direct and then the EU VAT stuff made that headache. So I stopped selling direct in 2015. But I will be revisiting this in 2016, as various online stores now have ways of dealing with that EU VAT. And of course, it's not just EU VAT anymore, because it's been so successful for the EU in generating revenue, that it is spreading. So I think in 2016, we'll see that it's basically a tax on digital goods. The online sort of selling world has escape this up to a point, but we will see Japan, Australia, and some other countries have started jumping in too. So essentially, if your customers are in these various countries, you have to pay that various tax. So the direct sales stores like Amazon, Kobo, etc., all deal with this. But increasingly, we should have more options for selling direct and not having to deal with it personally, but dealing with it through a third party. Okay, so I will be talking a bit more about some of these things with Jane Friedman when I have her on the show in a couple of weeks. I also wanted to just some other things that I'm looking forward to that impact storytelling and education. And I know that we have a little bit of a drinking game with virtual reality. But excitingly, I've been talking about it again for ages. Virtual reality goes mainstream in 2016. Oculus Rift and a ton of other headsets are going public. You will see a lot of them in the stores after CES, the big electronics thing in Las Vegas. And I think it will start in gaming. Obviously, there's a lot in the erotica space, but I think it will also offer a new way of storytelling and a new way of shopping that will change the way we use the internet. I definitely see us, you know, I could be doing this podcast in Prague, for example, and you could be joining me on VR. That's the type of thing I think we will be doing it for. So whether you write fiction and you want new ways of spinning your world, or if you write nonfiction and you want ways of education, or if you think about shopping, ebook, you know, like a bookstore, virtual bookstore, this will be becoming much bigger from this year. And yes, I will be getting an Oculus Rift and I will tell you about it when I get one. I'm not even a gamer, but I'm excited. This is what I think, this is why I think this is such a big deal, because if someone like me who is not a gamer is interested, this is a big deal. I also wanted to mention that I saw a 3D printer. Now, we don't talk about this much because it's not, you know, directly applicable to most people's writing. But 3D printing is one of those technologies that is an exponential technology, as in it's been going for years, but it is just reaching a tipping point. I saw a 3D printer in a local electronics shop for £299. So this technology is almost in our homes. I mean, it won't be long until it's a lot cheaper. Of course, the cartridges will be expensive, but it will be, you know, for online sales, it will be awesome. So you will sell designs, people will print them at home. And why I mention it is because when I did Gates of Hell, which is almost a year ago now, I wanted to have a 3D printed key to go with the book, but I was too early, I think. But the tech is almost here. And I'm really looking forward to when I can put patterns in the book. So there might be clues, or, you know, there's all kinds of things that you could possibly do with 3D printing. So if you can include patterns as part of your digital package, for example, there's loads of things that are going to be possible for online creators. So I'm really looking forward to what we're going to see in those spaces in 2016. Whew, now I know this is a long, this is a much bigger intro than I was expecting to do. But hey, you know, you can always fast forward if you're not interested. So just to talk about my own goals for 2016, my number one goal this year is to become a healthy author. So, you know, I'm reasonably healthy, but I would definitely say that I'm as a workaholic, a happy workaholic, because I love what I do, but I have not put as much priority into my physical health than my writing. So what I really am going to do this year, and because I'm a goal-setting junkie, I have booked the Race to the Stones in July 2016, which is 100 kilometres over 2 days. I'll be walking that. So in order to get fit for that, I have a walking training programme, and I'm basically going to be doing a lot more walking. And I will also, I'm finally going to master dictation. I still get RSI pain. Thank you for everybody's tips, and I have tried a lot of them, but I need to fix the underlying problem, which is, you know, I need to change the way I write. So I want to be able to dictate as I walk, but also as I'm doing now, dictating my work rather than writing it. So that's really important, and that is my number one goal. I also am going to create more, become a better writer, and give JF Penn more time. So this year, very much, I've done a lot for the Creative Penn, and really have focused on doing a lot for the website, making it more streamlined, all of that. But I need to be more fiction focused in 2016. I will continue to do this podcast every week, but I probably won't be blogging very much. I have one non-fiction book that I want to write, which is a psychology of writing book, which I've been talking about for ages, and but it's quite a complicated one, so, and an important one, so that is going to happen next year, but this year as we talk. So that's there, but the other five, so I want to do six books again, the other five will be fiction. I'm also going to do an adaptation, screenplay adaptation for One Day in Budapest. With the political situation in Eastern Europe right now, it's a very good time for this book. So I'm booked on a course to force myself to do that. I also have blocked out space in my diary, so I don't say yes to things. I am terrible for saying yes to being on other people's podcasts and agreeing to do webinars and this, that, and the other, and you know, without making sure that I focus on creating my books. So I've also booked on more craft courses and will be going to other conferences and focusing on becoming a better writer. I'll also be looking at IPR license and sales of foreign rights, so I'll come back to that later. I am doing a couple of speaking things. I'm at the Smarter Artists Summit in Austin, Texas in March, run by Johnny, Sean and Dave from the Self-Publishing Podcast. So if you are coming to that, that's at smarterartistsummit.com. I'll also be going to New Orleans just before that to do some occult research. I'm also speaking at the Digital Commerce Summit in October in Denver, Colorado. So I will be... and there will be some other travel for sure. With the Creative Penn, I am going to create like a career path set of main pages. So it will help people navigate the immense amount of information on the site now. And potentially I might do a course on writing fiction, writing nonfiction. Maybe, we'll see. And for my income goal, I'm being very ambitious and saying I would like to double my income again. And the way to do that for all of us is the rely on the basics, which are create more products, mainly books in various formats, foreign rights sales and other rights exploitation, plus expanding distribution to more retailers and countries. Because remember how rights work. So if you write one book, it's not one book. It is one format, and you can sell that in multiple countries, multiple stores, multiple formats, and that will create multiple streams of income. I'm also going to focus on building my email list more for the Creative Penn and JF Penn, as the size of the audience directly impacts income. And I'm going to use paid advertising to drive traffic to both products and my email list sign up. I always heavily rely on content marketing, which is, you know, free stuff like podcasts, but I'm going to push my comfort zone a little and do more paid ads. Okay, so that's my 2016. Next, I have a few cool things that you will find useful. First of all, How to Market a Book is on sale at 99 cents or 99p right now on all stores. It's part of a great promotion at Good Writer, where you can get 15 books for writers all at 99 cents each, plus a free e-course, Working Writer, Happy Writer. So go to thecreativepen.com/goodjan, G-O-O-D-J-A-N. Or of course, you can just grab How to Market a Book at any of the online stores for 99 cents only in the first couple of days as this goes out, 4th to the 6th of January. Next cool thing, if you're launching a book this year, and let's face it, that's probably all of us, you can get Tim Grohl's Book Launch Blueprint for free, the step-by-step guide to a best-selling launch. Tim was on the show in 2015 talking about book titles. He wrote Your First 1,000 Copies, and I know a lot of people love that book, and we had a great chat about book titles that sell, productivity for authors, and marketing for introverts. And he now has the Book Launch Blueprint, and you can get that at thecreativepen.com/book-launch-blueprint, thecreativepen.com/book-launch-blueprint. And again, all these links will be on the show notes for episode 250. And finally, very excitingly, I know I often do webinars with other people. I'm actually doing a webinar. It's going to be 7 Steps to Successful Self-Publishing in 2016. And it will be on Monday, 11th of January at 4 p.m. US and US Eastern, 9 p.m. UK. So you can get the recording if you register. And I'm doing that with Joel Friedlander, but I am doing the presentation and Joel is hosting. So that's 7 Steps to Successful Self-Publishing in 2016. And that's at thecreativepen.com/success webinar. So thecreativepen.com/success webinar. Okay. We're coming to the end, I promise. So here's what you've sent me in the last few weeks. Kristen sent a picture in the dark, listening on the exercise bike before the sun came up in North Denver. Icy Sedgwick, listening to the show while heading to see my best friend so I can deliver homemade Christmas gingerbread. Love the show. I've been writing so much since I started listening. Thanks, Icy. Yatia, listening to the podcast while driving cats to the vet for the purpose of spay, neuter and release, part of a volunteer program to control the population of feral cats. That's definitely a first. Tony is listening to the show while putting the final touches on his first Create Space book. Fantastic. I hope you're holding that in your hand, Tony, and smiling a lot. Brittany Fichter, making Mexican quinoa and riding my exercise bike while listening. Good habits equal healthy creatives. Fantastic, Brittany. I should probably cycle while recording or something. Sarah Beth Hunt, view from a treehouse in winter, like light plays on Loch Fyne. Wonderful, and it is beautiful up there. Oh, Scott King, this made me laugh. This is after the show with Kevin Tomlinson about downsizing to an RV. Scott King says, for the sake of balance, when are you going to interview someone who is like, big houses and lots of books are awesome? And also Meg Cowley left me a note on Facebook and also said, I disagree with you about the downsizing. And, you know, the whole point with the downsizing was not about you lot downsizing. It was, what are you going to give up for your writing? And if you want to be a full-time writer, you may have to change your priorities. That was it. But what is funny is we're talking about buying a house next year. So it may be that I go from fully downsized back to upsizing. We shall see. John L. Monk. Just heard the podcast with Kevin, clapped when you talked briefly about Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, which is brilliant. Yes, I agree. And I've been seeing it everywhere. I think it's wonderful when someone like Dan, and Hardcore History is this amazing podcast, super long, like really, really super long, but really in-depth history. It's wonderful when people can make a living with what they love. Jan Vermeer, just listening to you and your guests convinced me that it's possible to be an author, not just a writer. Fantastic. Mary Ellen Latella, I spent some time enjoying your podcast. Love your upbeat tone. Fantastic. Greg, thanks for the support. Published the first of many books with your mentorship. Thank you, Greg. Christopher Ryan, listening while walking in unseasonable weather, saw this cherry tree. Temperatures drop next week, poor tree. Yeah, it's funny. I actually saw a cherry tree with cherries on. I mean, it's been so warm. It's crazy. Rebecca J. Clark, listening to the podcast instead of taking down Christmas decorations. There's always tomorrow. Thanks to Indie Plot Twist for naming this show one of the top indie publishing podcasts of 2015. Katie Ritchie, just subscribed to the show. Love that you visit the places in books. That is my new goal. And Rebecca J. Clark again, listening while driving to work in the fog, trying to wake up with a hot cup of coffee. Fantastic. Thank you to everybody. And of course, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or email joanna@thecreativepen.com and let me know what you're doing while you're listening to the show or how you've taken action from what you've learned. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by 99 Designs, where you can get all kinds of designs for your author business, including book covers, merchandising, branding, business cards, illustrations, artwork, and much more. So what happens at 99 Designs? Well, first of all, you can get a power pack upgrade worth $99, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed at 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. So once you're there, you set up your design brief. For a book cover, you really must specify what goes on the front, the title, subtitle, author name, and if it's print, what goes on the back and the spine as well. Really important to prepare beforehand what you want. I also suggest that you think about the genre. You really have a look at the top 100 books in your chosen categories on Amazon. Take some screen prints. Give some idea as to the feeling and the sort of emotions that you want to convey, perhaps even the colour if you have some ideas. For example, if it's a series, then you want to resonate your font, that type of thing, or your website. Put down all your ideas. You might even want to give examples from your genre. These things are important whether you're using a freelance designer or if you're going through 99 Designs. Once you have lots of submissions, you give feedback, leave comments, and if you keep it public, if you keep your competition public, you will find people will use other designs to make their own. This can be good because you get iterations, but if you make it a blind competition, you'll get more originality but fewer iterations. You can also do a poll to your social media or email list so that you get your customers and readers and or friends to actually help you choose the cover. Then once you pick the winner, you get the files and you are done. And you have 100% money back guarantee. You don't have to pay if you don't get a design you like. I personally have a cover designer that I use for my books, but I've used 99 Designs for custom illustrations. I've used them for The Key to the Gates of Hell, which does feature on the cover of the book of the same name, and the interior as well as a motif. Plus, for dark fantasy thriller Risen Gods, we commissioned a map for the front of the book, and I have the print book here in front of me, and the map is awesome, and I love it. And that, you know, all good fantasy books need a map. So I'm really happy with that. And I do think your book cover design is the best marketing asset you can have. Well worth investing in. So make your book stand out in 2016. Get your power pack upgrade worth $99, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed at 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons, Suzanne Grosser, Jerry Smith Reddy, and Deborah Burst. I really appreciate your support on Patreon, like your tweets and emails. It really demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. You can support the show on Patreon for even a dollar per show, to a maximum of 2 shows a month. So I only charge for 2 shows a month, less than a coffee a month. And now you also get an extra monthly Q&A audio for Patreon supporters only. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thank you. We're at the end of the massive introduction, which has really been a long one. I hope you've enjoyed it. It has been super personal today. And now we'll get into even more of my voice, and I will talk about my creative writing process. So today I am talking about my creative process because I'm kind of just about starting Destroyer of Worlds, which is Arcane book number 8. And I really love this part of the process. And I kind of wanted to talk about it because so often I'm very reductionist, I guess. I like processes and steps and, you know, I like how-to stuff, and most of the nonfiction I write is very practical and pragmatic. And this year one of my top recommendations for books was Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, which is excellent. And I think magic is probably the wrong word, but the idea that it's less reductionist, that the creative process has that sort of edge of something almost supernatural, is definitely what I find. And I've called it synchronicity in the past, in that as I delve deeper, things happen which were unexpected. And that is definitely part of my process. So I've just written down a few notes, so I'll just talk through them. So apologies if this is out of order. But hey, it's New Year, so I hope you're relaxing as you listen to this. So first of all, the kind of original idea, I get lots of ideas from my travels. So I travel a lot. I have always traveled a lot. I particularly like going to places with a rich cultural history. So the very first scene of Stone of Fire, my very first novel, opens in Varanasi on the banks of the Ganges in India. And I went there back in, I think it was 2006, I first went there, and I saw them burning the bodies in the burning ghats. And the idea that was kind of sprung then started that first scene in Stone of Fire, when a nun meets a burning end. I'm terrible with nuns. Sorry, all the nuns out there. But so what's interesting is the idea for that came, you know, years before the actual book. So I tend to find that the stories I write, the original idea came from years ago, unless it's something kind of unexpected. So for example, One Day in Budapest, we went to Budapest because my husband's family originally is from Hungary, and we visited the synagogue where we saw his family's name in the mass grave. And at the same time, the government had just called for a registration of all Jews in Hungary. And that shocked me so much that that was happening. I decided I had to write a book about the rise of far-right extremism in Eastern Europe. And that turned into One Day in Budapest, which is kind of action-adventure with those themes. But that idea was kind of unexpected, and I hadn't thought about that before we actually got there. But generally, going back to India, Destroyer of Worlds, I remember very distinctly seeing a statue of Shiva Nataraja in India, again in Delhi, same year I visited Varanasi. And I saw this statue, and it's, if you Google Shiva Nataraja, you'll see the exact image. It's Shiva dancing and in this ring of fire, as such, and it's the destroyer of worlds and the remaker of worlds. And it's a fascinating myth. And I remember seeing that image and just really loving it. And that is what has sparked this story. So I wanted to go back to India and revisit some of the places there. And then in terms of what happens next, so I have this kind of kernel of an idea. And then from there, I start to research. So for me, research is going places, obviously, and visiting museums, visiting the kind of iconic places of that city or that region, and kind of soaking that up, because all of my books have the setting is incredibly important. And then I just start to find things that are more interesting. So I follow my curiosity into what I will research next. So, and that may come from other places and other things. So then I was I read the Guardian newspaper in the UK, and I just saw this article about the vultures or the lack of vultures threatening Mumbai's Towers of Silence. And the Towers of Silence is based on the ancient Zoroastrian tradition of disposing of dead bodies by putting them out in the air, and the carrion birds eat them. And this also happens in Tibet and Nepal and many of these older civilizations. And, you know, it's completely natural, but it's really interesting that in the middle of Mumbai would be this Towers of Silence, this place where bodies are put out. And that's really cool. For me, that just makes me go, oh, yes, that's got to go in a book. So I start writing down just the things that catch my eye. So that is, Mumbai is a fascinating city. I actually haven't been to Mumbai. I really would like to go, but that's okay. I do write about places I haven't been, but I do try and ground them in things I have. But that's just one thing. So that's like shopping for settings as such. So that's kind of one thing that happens. Then I will dive deeper. So Shiva Nataraja, for example, I know a surface level of information, but what I will then do is research that a lot more. So research, Shiva and the various temples associated with Shiva, and what about all the different stuff in other places in the world, because most my books generally have multiple locations in. So that curiosity drives a deeper research period. And this is what I really love, because I'm such a research junkie and I find out really fascinating stuff. So At this point, I tend to read books on my Kindle, and I do a lot of highlighting. I then transfer the highlights just into either just a Pages/Word document or into Scrivener. At this point, I generally just keep it in a general document, just loads and loads of notes on random stuff. I do write notes in my journals, which I've got here in front of me. I also write notes as I watch DVDs or stuff on TV shows. Actually, I watched one on the Kumbh Mela, which is incredible. The biggest gathering of of pilgrims, of people in the whole world. And I think I'm trying to figure out how many millions of people are there, but it's a lot of Hindu pilgrims who meet in one place. There's four different places where they meet, and it really is crazy. And so I watched a documentary on Kumbh Mela, and I just thought, yep, definitely have to use that in the book. So when I'm watching programs on things, I'll just be taking notes in my handwritten notes in my Moleskines. For example, I'm just looking back at one now, I won't just be writing down facts. I'll actually be writing down colors and different things like that. For example, when I think of India, I think of the women wearing bright colours, just far more bright colours than we do in the West, and how clean everybody always is. I always think it's so funny. Some people, have this image of India as a dirty place, but to me, it's super clean because everybody's always washing. There's a lot of washing that goes on, as part of the all the religious faiths, really, but fascinating stuff. So that's where I start, and that's where I am right now with Destroyer of Worlds, which is why I wanted to kind of talk about it now, was I don't have a plot. I do have an opening scene, and I've had an opening scene in my head for a while, and that's going to be in London. And that will then spark the story. But I do know that I will have these various aspects that that will go into it. It will, and the title Destroyer of Worlds obviously gives that Hindu aspect to it. But then, of course, it also, the first thing that people think of when they hear Destroyer of Worlds is Oppenheimer. I am become death, destroyer of worlds, which actually is a quote from the Bhagavad Gita. It was not Oppenheimer's quote as such. He actually said that as a quote. So then it's like, okay, so Oppenheimer, nuclear bombs, obviously the links with Nazis and some of the fascination, Himmler, for example, Himmler's fascination with some of the Hindu myths, you know, even the swastika, for example, you know, the original symbol. So those are all the things that start going into the ideas for the book. And then what happens is synchronicity, as I said, this kind of the magic aspect that I find happens when I'm researching, is that something will come up that totally unexpected that makes the story work. So, for example, with Stone of Fire, that first novel, it was really, my jaw dropped the day it happened. I was reading Carl Jung's Red Book, which had been hidden for years by his family. It was basically a diary of his breakdown, and he did all these watercolors, these pictures, not watercolors, he did the paintings, you know, quite bold actually, of different paintings. And my book Stone of Fire was about has a lot of Jungian psychology in it. Morgan Sierra, my main character, you know, it specializes in psychology of religion, which Jung was highly into. And what I found in the Red Book, this hidden book, hidden for years, just shown to the public, was a painting that exactly matched my story. And that painting is in Stone of Fire, and you know, I include that as part of the plot. But when that happened, I was just, you know, gobsmacked. And that synchronicity of story emerging from fascination and research still just kind of makes me shiver a little bit, because it happens every time. And Stephen King talks about the emergence of, you know, of the story. The story is a found thing, and I kind of believe that. Like, I think I go looking for a story in the real world, and then I will twist part of the reality into the thing that's fiction. So Stone of Fire obviously is based on looking for some stones that the apostles had where their bodies are buried, and all of the traveling to where the bodies of the apostles are is kind of true, as in, you know, there are bones in those places and relics, but the power of the stones actually obviously is made up. So that's what I like doing best, is kind of taking real stuff and then twisting it a little bit. So once I have done this research period, and that's where I am at the moment with Destroyer of Worlds, so I will give myself, you know, it can be quite a long period, it will depend, but I'll give myself, you know, at least 2 weeks, sometimes longer, depending on how much I'm into it. But, you know, a couple of weeks of really just delving deep and following rabbit holes on the internet. So, you know, for example, I will Google things like Nazis plus Shiva and see what comes up. And I'm not going to give some stuff away, because I found some amazing, cool things already that just make me go, oh, seriously, that is just wow. So those are the things that happen when you, and of course you find lots of conspiracy theory sites, which are for thriller writers, just awesome. But what I do in this period is just let it all kind of percolate. Because I'm writing in an existing series, I already have my characters. What I don't have is my antagonist, because I generally kill them off at the end of each book. So this one, I obviously need a new baddie, and I do have in mind who the baddie will be, and pretty cool, and quite happy with this baddie. And I have my main characters, Morgan and Jake, and I also, there's a kind of spin-off I'm thinking of. I want to do kind of Arcane Black Ops spin-off. So what I want to do in this book is also introduce briefly like a tangential character, so that when I do this next book, which I'm already thinking about, and this is the other thing, I think about more than one book at the same time, but I will never write more than one fiction at the same time. I think that's really important for me, because otherwise I get confused. Those of you who've read some of my books will discover, my fascination with tattoos, for example, come up in several books. And also, if you read Risen Gods and Deviants, there are some crossovers there as well with the kind of Maori mythology. So these things can come up in multiple books. We all know that. I mean, we all have our fascinations. So anyway, yes, so I have my characters. I pretty much know the beats of how an arcane thriller works. So I know that there will be, you know, some kind of cool object, and someone will want to destroy the world or kill loads of people, and Morgan and Jake have to stop them. I mean, that is the essence of a thriller in general. So we know that that will happen, and that there will be lots of different places they have to go, and they'll find cool things, and it'll be lots of fun and fast paced. But equally, I also like to have an underlying theme, and often in my arcane books, it really is the kind of the supernatural, faith versus unbelief, and good versus evil, really big themes. So I enjoy putting those elements in as well. So, but the main thing is that after I've done this research for a couple of weeks, I then, since I read The Story Grid by Sean Coyne, and you can go back and listen to the podcast with Sean, which was actually January 2014, that was episode 208 with Sean Coyne. Since then, and since I've read his book, The Story Grid, which is like my favourite number one writing book for fiction authors, I now do the foolscap method for an outline. So I'm not someone who outlines like a crazy person, although I might be doing that more as I get into dictation in 2016. But mainly I do a foolscap one pager. It's essentially a one pager with the main beats of the book, the main highlights, the main twists, the main reversals, that type of thing. And from there, then I start writing. And then often what I'll do with I'll write about 20,000 words, 30,000 words, and then I will kind of replot the next bit. So normally I know the beginning, I know the ending. Right now, I don't know I don't know the ending. I kind of have an idea. It will depend on how the rest of the research goes, but I normally know the big climactic scene, but I kind of don't know the middle bit. So I write 20 to 30,000 words, and then I will do replotting around the rest of the book. I also, as I'm doing the research, I start a book page on Pinterest. So if you go to pinterest.com/JFPen, I have boards for most of my books. I started doing it around book four. So I have a number of boards for different things. So at the moment, my Destroyer of Worlds board has some really cool pictures of Shiva Nataraja and India and Kumbh Mela and some of the cool things associated with that. And you can also have a look at the boards for all my other books. And actually, I really, really love, and I put in the back of my books, I always do an author's note, and I include the links to those Pinterest boards at the back, and people really love them. And I share them as I write the books as well. I'll share the various pictures as I go. But looking back, it's amazing because I'm a very visual person. Setting is super important to me, and descriptions of where people are and what they're seeing. And, you know, because I will be writing some screenplays this year as well, because I really would like to see these, done on the big screen, wouldn't we all? But I do like having the images because they really help set the scene as I'm writing. So what I'll do if I'm about to write, say I'm writing the chapters, there will probably be chapters at Kumbh Mela, I will have, I will spend some time really looking at pictures of the people, like the sadhus at the Kumbh Mela are just amazing. You know, some of them are sort of wearing ash, and there's, you know, the marigolds. I always think of marigolds when I think of the Hindus, and the long dreadlocks, and you know, these really just fascinating things that are so different to like a Western church, you know, like the Church of England. Compare the Church of England service, with, as my husband calls it, Christian droning, because English people don't really sing with enthusiasm, versus these kind of sadhus at Kumbh Mela, where there's millions of people. It's just brilliant. So I love having these images to work from as I'm writing. And with Scrivener, you can have a split screen. So I'll often even have these pictures up, or I'll watch YouTube videos as I'm writing the scene to kind of bring that to life. So I have my Pinterest board. Then I will basically just see what emerges as I write. I think I have on my wall here, one of the many things I have on my wall is trust emergence. Because what I found is that sometimes things will just arrive on the page or in your brain as you're doing stuff, and that will be the cool thing. And you don't necessarily know that before you start writing. So that trusting emergence is so important. And I think that an important part of the creative process. One, that I trust the emergence from the research, that there's so many interesting things that I could write about, and I have to write about the things that my curiosity draws me to. And then as I'm writing, the emergence of an idea from the mass of possibilities and the chemistry of what happens on the page, I guess. And also, once you know your characters are kind of fully fleshed out, and my antagonist will be fleshed out based on my research, really. He or she will be Indian. So there will be a lot more about that once I've done more research. And it's so important to me to do that. And also, as I said, it is the most fun part for me. I love it. And I think one of the reasons that I am a writer is when I figured out, I spent time thinking about what my ideal life was like. And I think that's a very important thing to do. If you want to decide what to do with your life, consider what you want your life to look like what will your days look like. And for me, I wanted to spend my time learning, because I love learning, and also traveling and creating things I'm proud of. And those things together do come up with writing. I also like helping people, which is why I like doing the podcast and the blog and everything, and why I write nonfiction. And I guess I'll talk about nonfiction another time, but my creative process for fiction really does revolve around this type of deep dive into research. I also take a lot of pictures on my journeys, and they will often spark ideas. So for example, we are going to Prague. We haven't been yet as I record this. And although I've been to Prague before, so I know, for example, I know the Jewish graveyard there, which Hitler didn't have destroyed because it was meant to be a memorial to a dead race, a classic. That is a place that I remember very, very well, because, you know, it's a very powerful thing that it's not a memorial to a dead race. In going there, you remember what could have been. And I absolutely know that I'll be taking pictures there that somehow ideas will come from that, and things will happen because of going to that place. But it doesn't have to be traveling away to different places. I mean, it can just be around your house. You know, I went for a walk the other day through the fields, and I'm in training for this race to the stones, which is 100 kilometers over 2 days. And so I'm going to be doing a lot of walking. And while I was walking, I got a lot of ideas about a character that I'm thinking, this spin-off, as I mentioned, the Arcane Black Ops thing. The character who that will be around is a man, and I got a lot of ideas about him as I was out walking, just looking at various things. And I've got some ideas as to how I want a trilogy of books to be set around this particular character and what role he plays in the world as such. And so that was just walking out from my house for a couple of hours. And that's the thing. I don't want you to think that you have to travel to faraway places in order to get these ideas. For me, that's how I write. That's what I love to write. But if you, especially if you write sort of family drama, you can write that close to home. So I think the important thing is that we get ideas from anywhere. just remembered that I don't think I mentioned my Things app on my phone. So I don't always have my moleskins because I have the A5 size moleskins. I also like Lurktherm, probably saying that, massacring that, but Lurktherm notebooks. But on my phone, I have a Things app, which is a to-do list app, but I also have a folder for fiction ideas. And that's what if I'm watching TV with my husband, for example, watching a show, or if I'm reading, I'll often read on my phone. I'll put a note in. So for example, his I'm just in the folder now as we're talking. I found an article on the abandoned libraries of the Sahara, and I just put the link there into the phone. I don't know when that will come up again, but the abandoned libraries in the Sahara is something that makes me interested. Like, I'm interested in that. I want to know more about that. Or I saw this on a website for Bath Abbey. So I've just written a short story about Bath Abbey, where I'm now living. But I saw this on their website. And so it's a direct quote: "The advisor on the paranormal can be contacted through the diocesan office from," and this is on a very, you know, again, Church of England website. So I just thought that was really cool. So I just write down, you know, different things as I see them, and, you know, and I put links to articles. Oh, here's another one: Cordyceps, fungi that grows inside live animals. That's really cool. So I just write down things. Now, who knows when this stuff will come back and into my conscious mind, or it might not. It might just emerge on the page and I discover later that I'd actually written a note about something and forgotten it, but it came up back into my head. So I guess what I'm saying, and I'm rounding up now before I just waffle on for hours, is that my creative process does have that touch of magic, or that touch of something that's not quite in my control, even though I'm somebody who is quite controlling in many ways, which is probably why I'm an indie author. I like the control we have over publishing and book marketing and all that. And I like being able to write whatever catches my curiosity. And that really is how I write fiction. It has to be something I'm personally fascinated with. And I'm pretty much assume that if I'm fascinated, then there will be other people who are interested in it and that will, you know, want to read this type of book. So there you go. That is my creative process for fiction and how I get my ideas and how I work them into a book. So thanks for listening, and I will see you next week. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.